Jimmy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to do the introductions here quick, and let me just state that this is going to take a council action, and the council action, the motions will come from Captain Rodney Avila, seeing as he is vice chairman of this committee. They will mirror the actions taken by Mid-Atlantic Council in December, and it's in response to a letter from Frank Almeida, I believe it was dated October the 16th, requesting both councils adopt a formal recommendation for the gear. We have with us the presentation going to be made by Jim Gartland. He is he works with VIMS down there, Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He's a project manager for the CHESMAP survey, which is Chesapeake Bay Inshore Survey, as well as the NEMAP survey, and a pilot study was done this year. Pilot cruise was done this year. And on that cruise, he was a lead scientist. And he will give the presentation with the information provided by the trawl committee. And if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hold questions until the end of his presentation. And some of these questions may be beyond Jim's ability to answer. In such case, Captain Rodney, myself, or Philly, all members of the committee, will be glad to help out. I did want to make people aware of this committee. I've served on a lot of committees since I've been involved with the council, but this Trawl Advisory Committee is probably one of the most beneficial and it gives you a good feeling that you're doing something right as far as the process goes. It was created in lieu of the trawl warp issue in Woods Hole. I wouldn't say it's an easy committee to deal with. It's made up of New England and Mid-Atlantic Council members. It's made up of New England and Mid-Atlantic fishermen. It's made up of academics, and it's made up of Science Center personnel. So basically, you've got a bag of assorted nuts to deal with and try to get, you know, motions and issues out of. But it's been very productive. But the bigger players in this, just so they get the recognition, in all fairness, is the trawl design and manufacturers of both New England and Mid-Atlantic. These are competing entities that design and sell gear. But all of them come together. Three of the major players come together, and the competition mode went away. They all work collectively to come up with a design of a gear for the survey vessels, and it's unprecedented. And it's really a privilege to chair this group, and I'm proud to be part of it. So, Jim, I guess it's up to you, so take it away, Mighty Mouse.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the council, for inviting me to speak to you today. I just figured before I started into the actual presentation itself, I just wanted to give you a little bit of an overview of the presentation so you had some idea of what I was going to talk about over the next half hour. As you can see my title slide up there, my purpose today really is to talk to you about the performance of the gear, and that would be the net and the doors that we used on our new NEMAP inshore trawl survey. And before I go too much further, the NEMAP stands for the Northeast Area Monitoring and Assessment Program. And I figured I'd start this presentation off just by giving you guys a little bit of a background, just so you have some idea of how this new survey and how the pilot work we conducted last year came to be. And then from there, I'm going to talk about the actual gear itself, highlighting, you know, really the reasons that we chose this net and these doors, and also talk a little bit about some of the specifications, just so you know exactly what it was that we worked with. And then from there, I'll run through the results section showing you how this gear performed in the field. And this would be the inshore waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight. Talk about some of the trials we ran just to see how this gear would react to changes in things like net settings and fishing conditions. And then wrap the whole thing up by showing you how this net performed in a real-life fishery-independent trawl survey application. And I also want to talk a little bit about catches just so you can see how it caught, again, in the inshore waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight. So that's how the presentation is going to go. In terms of background, the idea for that new NEMAP inshore trawl survey, basically, as you can see up on the map there, that was going to work from Montauk, New York in the north down to Cape Hatteras, North Carolina in the south in the inshore waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight, really came about in 1999. And that was in response to the perception that maybe the fishery-independent survey coverage, the trawl survey coverage in that area, maybe was a little bit less than what people were looking for. And what I mean by that is it wasn't that there was no coverage in that area, but as you can see, from the six states in that zone there, actually New Jersey, is highlighted in blue up there, is the only state that conducts a coastal trawl survey. And besides New Jersey, the only other group doing any kind of trawl work in there is the Northeast Center as part of their groundfish surveys that occur in the spring and fall. But as I'm sure you guys are all aware, they announced recently that they're going to be taking delivery on a new, much larger survey boat, the Henry Bigelow. It's not only going to be a lot bigger than their old boat, the Albatross, but it's going to have a lot deeper draft. And really, they're not going to be able to sample the coastal waters in the Mid-Atlantic Bight much at all anymore, just because the draft's so deep, there's concerns about running aground. So in response to this, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission started forming a number of committees whose job it was really basically to get this survey up and running, set up the survey designs, protocols, procedures, and things like that. But the big impediment at this point in time, which was around the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, would be lack of money. We didn't have any money to do any field work, and as you guys know, without money, there's not a whole lot that's going to happen. But that didn't take, fortunately, too long to fix. In early 2005, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission made $250,000 available for some small-scale NEMAP pilot work to be conducted in 2006. And in response to the request for proposals, they got a single proposal that was from our group down at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. And after a few more committee meetings, they decided to award us funding, which was August of 2005. Now, as you can probably figure, between August 2005 and when we actually started our work in 2006, there were a lot of different issues to consider and details to be worked out. But the one I wanted to talk about today mostly, just in the interest of time, would be the gear itself. And I figured, you know, I'd begin by talking about the net and start off by showing some pictures, just for anybody who may be completely unfamiliar with the gear. Up in the upper right-hand corner there, and I'll try to do this without blinding anybody with the laser, there it is the actual gear itself being hauled back after one of our tows. The upper left-hand corner over there is a almost identical copy that belongs to the Northeast Center, strung up in their warehouse up in Woods Hole. And I just put that up there to give you an idea of the scale. Those are full-size people right in that area there. So it's decent-sized gear. And then the picture down in the bottom in the center, right down there, is not the actual net, but instead is a scale model. It's a 1-7 scale model that was designed and constructed for some flume tank trials that were to occur on this gear by the Northeast Center at Memorial University in Newfoundland back in early 2005, I believe. And I just wanted to include that picture just for anybody who, you know, give you an idea what it might look like when it's dragging over the bottom. But anyway, the gear we used is what is known as a four-seam, three-bottom trawl. It has, again, in terms of size, a 23.36-meter head rope length. And really, there were three big reasons we decided to go with this gear. And the first was the idea of compatibility. And what I mean by that is when we were in the process of choosing our gear, it was thought that maybe perhaps this might be the gear that the Northeast Center decides to use when they start fishing off the Bigelow. And at this point, you know, we're kind of seeing ourselves as the inshore component of the Northeast Center's offshore work in the Mid-Atlantic Bight. And we figured, all right, you want catches and data to be compatible. What better way to do that than to drag the exact same gear behind the boat? Obviously, some comparisons will be necessary because not everything is the same. But by dragging the exact same gear, you're taking a lot of those variables that will be affecting your catch off the table. So compatibility was the first reason. Second had to do with the idea of basically industry acceptance. And as Jim mentioned earlier, this net was designed by a panel, as I'm sure you all know, that was made up of fishery scientists, fishery managers, and representatives from the commercial fishing industry. And really, because that third group was involved, that means that the probability of acceptance of the data that comes out of this net is much higher than if you had a situation, let's say, where you had a bunch of scientists like myself trying to put a net together and came up with something that the industry thought was a piece of garbage. In the first case, you know, you're not guaranteed data acceptance because if your protocols and your procedures are no good, your data won't be any good either. But in the second case, no matter how good you are with your workups, if the industry and if the fishing community doesn't think your gear is any good, you're pretty much stuck right there. So we figured we'd at least take a step in the right direction and pick a gear that did have some sort of industry acceptance. And our third major reason, and of course this was not the least, has to do with the fishing characteristics of the net itself. And what I mean by that is this three-bridle, four-seam design is meant to fish a little bit higher in your water column and is supposed to tend bottom a little bit better than your older-style survey nets, which you would think taken together would give you a little bit better representative picture of the finfish communities in your survey area, which obviously is the point of your fishery independent trawl survey. And just to mention briefly, this net was designed to fish at about 13 to 14 meters of wing spread, somewhere about 4.5 to 5.5 meters of head rope height. So that pretty much covers our reasons for going with this gear for NEMAT. In terms of the specifications, as I said, she's a four-seam, three-bridle bottom trawl. Has a 23.36-meter head rope length. In terms of mesh sizes, it's composed of a number of panels of 12-centimeter stretch mesh webbing, which are mostly, let me do this here, in the wings and then down along the foot rope. And then most of the rest of the body is made up of panels of 6-centimeter stretch mesh webbing. tight end has a 2.4 centimeter or a 1-inch knotless nylon liner, which the purpose is really to retain your smaller fishes and invertebrates. Head rope has 68-inch hard plastic floats, and the foot gear we're using has a 7.5 centimeter or basically 3-inch rubber cookie foot rope attached to a 3-inch rubber cookie sweep via a 9/16 traveler wire. And in terms of bridles, we had, as you can see down there, 36.6 meters of wire connecting our net to our doors. In terms of doors, for our NEMAT work, we went with the Tiburon Type 4 66-inch doors that are about 360 kilograms apiece. And really, the story behind the NEMAT doors is pretty interesting. And the reason I say that is, you know, when we're in the process of choosing our gear, the Northeast Center had done a lot of testing with that three-bridle, four-seam net, but the idea to couple it with these doors came around pretty late in the game from NEMAP's perspective. It was about a week or so before we started doing our work. And fortunately, we were able to act pretty quickly, especially for state agency. And with a lot of Jim's help, a few phone calls, we got these brand-new set of these doors down to the fishing vessel Darren R., which is Jim's boat, the boat we use for our work. In about 3 days' time, we got them hooked up. And the reason I say this is interesting is the data you're going to see today really is the first cut of this net door combination being fished in the field in a fishery, basically a fisheries application. So this is just something to kind of keep in mind. And then the last piece of gear I want to talk about before we get into results would be our net monitoring gear you see up here. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with this. There's a number of different manufacturers out there that make this type of equipment. But we went with the NetMine trawl monitoring system. And basically the way it works is you have sensors that are more or less hydroacoustic pingers, like those bullet-shaped things there. And they make a wide variety of them. You can see you can put them on your doors, your wings, a bunch of different headline sensors, the catch sensor. But they're pretty expensive. They're about $5,000 a piece. And we didn't have that kind of money. So we had a set of wing spread sensors, a headline sensor, and a catch sensor, which basically every 10 to 20 seconds gave us updates of how wide our net was open and how high our net was open as we were dragging it over the bottom. And I can't stress enough how nice it was to have this gear along, especially for a pilot cruise with a new net door combination, because it takes a lot of the guesswork out of the work we were doing. You can see what your net looks like when you're dragging it over the bottom. You know, it shows you how it reacts to changes in things like your net settings and your fishing conditions. So like I said, it takes a lot of the guesswork out, and guesswork isn't really what you want to do when you're trying to do science. So that pretty much covers the gear. In terms of what we did, in 2006, NEMAT ran three separate trips off of Darana. Our first one was on May 9th and 10th, and we had really three main objectives on this trip. The first was just to fish this net indoors, just to see how it would behave, how it would react as we were pulling it over the bottom. The second was to basically vary our net settings and our fishing conditions, like how fast we were going or how much wire we had out or how we had the doors set, see how the gear would react. And then the third was really related more to the scientists, because our group down at VIMS had only ever done smaller scale surveys with much smaller nets in the Chesapeake Bay, and we wanted to see if we'd be able to handle these catches that were coming out of this bigger net in the coastal zone, and we didn't do too badly, so that was certainly a plus. On our second trip on June 29 and 30, we got a chance to go out again. And at this point, Jim was not only nice enough to offer his boat up again, but he actually covered the expenses on this trip for us, which we really appreciated, certainly above and beyond. And I wanted to recognize that in the presentation. And the point of this trip was to give us the opportunity to invite some members of the Northeast Center along to give them the chance to evaluate this net door combination in the field, because, again, they were thinking about doing some testing with this as well. And since we were out there, it gave us a chance to run some more gear trials. But for these first two trips, really, at this point, we weren't in survey mode. We were more in gear testing mode. So we weren't so concerned about keeping everything the same from one tote to the next. And, in fact, the point was to change things to see how the net would change. But we took what we learned on the first two trips, applied them on our third trip on September 25th to October 15th, basically put them into survey mode and ran the NEMAP Inshore Pilot Trawl Survey cruise. And I do have data today to show you for each of these three trips. So in terms of what we saw, as I said, our first trip was May 9th and 10th. We wound up sampling 11 sites. You can see them given in red up here, basically just south of Cape Henry, down to the northern part of North Carolina in the inshore waters. And in terms of what we saw, I just want to take a second to explain this graph. This shows you what we saw in the first station, and it's an overall just a station picture of how the net performed. It's a time series, so you have time down here on the x-axis. The beginning of the tow is on the left-hand side. The end is on the right-hand side. And each point up here on each of these variables is a piece of data collected by the NetMine system. And as you can see, we had head rope height down here in meters in red. We had net width in meters up here in blue. We had vessel speed over ground given in this nice brown color in knots. and we had overall station averages for each of those variables given as well. And as you can see on our first station, we started out towing with the current. We had all of our net settings neutral, which basically means we had the net set the same way that we got it from the manufacturer when it was delivered to us. In terms of the doors, there are three attachment points on the inside of each door where you can attach your tow warps. We started out at the middle point, and we started in 48 feet of water with 75 fathom of wire out on each of the winches. And as you can see, we had an average vessel speed over ground of 3.5 knots, head rope height of 5.7 meters, wing spread of 15.3 meters. For tow two, just wanted to mention this black line here indicates where the brakes were set and the tow actually started. We wanted to turn the net mine system on a little bit early just to kind of watch the gear as it was being set, which is right here. But all of our averages are based on everything to the right of that black line. And as you can see now, we're going against the current, slower. We had 2.8 knots here, 5.1 meters of head rope, 14.1 meters of wing spread. And just something to notice, you would think that, you know, we had a little less head rope, about a meter less of wing spread. And you would think maybe going against the current, you'd see a little more water pressure on your net and your doors and more spread. But we were going a lot slower, so I think that counterbalanced that and led to the 14 meters there. Station three, now we had a cross current, 50 fathom of wire out. You see here, went a little bit faster. Vessel speed over ground was 3.4 knots, 4.9 meters of head rope, 14 meters of wing spread. We also had 50 fathom of wire out for this station, so we're going a lot faster. You'd think maybe more spread, but we had our whole system on a shorter leash here, less wire out. So we had, again, 14 meters of spread and 4.9 meters of head rope. Station four, now we had a fair tide. We picked up a little bit of speed, and just like you'd expect, going a little bit faster. You'd think maybe a little more water pressure on your system. Saw about a half meter more of wing spread. And as you expect, as your system's spreading out, it's going to bring your headline down a little bit. We lost not much, just about a tenth to two-tenths of a meter of head rope height on this station. For tow five, unfortunately, we had a computer failure. So the data that was supposed to be recorded from that station was lost. But my supervisor was on the computer at the time, and he noticed that after we pulled 50 centimeters in on the setback chains on the top bridle of the net, that just like you'd expect, it pulled the headline down about a half meter to a meter, and the wing spread was more or less unchanged. For tow 6 through tow 9 and for station 11, we made some minor modifications, but the changes really weren't all that drastic. There weren't really all that earth-shattering results, so I figured just skip over those in the interest of time and finish this trip off talking about station 10. And at this point, we had all of our net settings back to neutral with the exception of the sweep, which we pulled up in the forward position. And really what we wanted to run here was just a speed trial, just to vary vessel speed over ground and see how the gear would react. You can see here we started out 3.3 knots. We had 4.8 meters of head rope, 14.4 meters of wing spread. We sped up to 3.7 knots. And you would think going faster, maybe more water pressure, more spread. But we didn't see that. Again, 14.4 meters of wing spread. I double and triple checked those numbers. I'm not quite sure why it didn't change, but it didn't. And we had a little bit less head rope, but not much. But then when we slowed way down, just like you'd expect, there's less water pressure on your system. Your wings are going to come in at 13.6 knots here. I mean, 13.6 meters here, I'm sorry. And when your wings come in, it allows your head rope to come up to 5.2 meters. So really the main things to take away from this slide for this first station are that the gear over the fishing conditions we tested in the inshore waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight more or less reacted to changes in your fishing conditions like you would expect. However, as you can see here, the reactions we had really weren't all that drastic, so the gear was pretty stable. For the second trip, as I said, June 29 and 30, again, we ran 11 tows this time. They were mostly clustered right off the Virginia-North Carolina border. Did have a little few just a little bit further offshore. And give me a second here. I need to switch over to the presentations because we're going to go from landscape slides to portrait slides because we're going to run two graphs per slide here. Hold on a second. Use this mouse. Okay. And at this point, I ask you to bear with me just a little bit. We had a lot of data off this second trip because we had two sets of sensors. We had the VIMS netmine sensors, and we had the Northeast Center ScanMar sensors. So there was a lot of sensor data being collected, but I tried to break it up. So the netmine data is always on the top. ScanMar is always on the bottom here just to make it a little easier to read. But for this first tow, we basically wanted to run a warp trial where we changed the amount of wire we had out on the winches within the tow to see how the gear would react. We had the netmine system in the net, and because we didn't, as I said, have the opportunity to get some door sensors yet from netmine just because we couldn't afford them yet, we used the Northeast Center ScanMar door sensors and left them in the whole time so we can get some door data. And as you can see here, the numbers are kind of small, but as we went from 75 fathom to 50 fathom of wire out, just like you'd expect, your system's on a shorter leash. So your wing spreads are going to go from 14.8, as you see here, down to 13.4 meters. And as your wings are coming in, you're going to get an increase in head rope. It says here 4.7 up to 8 meters. That number there, I think, is a little bit suspect, only because we hadn't seen 8 meters of head rope height before, and we haven't seen it since. So it could be when we made our change here on this toe that the sensor may have gotten a little cockeyed in a net bag or something and given us a funny reading. The overall trend's right, but I said that number, just kind of keep in mind there. But we saw off the Scanmar sensors for the doors that when we had 50 fathom of wire out, we had 32.7 meters of door spread. For our second station on this trip, we basically just reran the same thing, taking the netmine sensors out, putting the Scanmar sensors in the net. And as you can see here, as you go from 50 to 75 fathom of wire out, your doors are more or less on a longer leash, 33.1 up to 37.8 meters, corresponding increase in wing spread. And as your whole system's spreading out, your headline's going to come down. So overall, the gear reacted as expected, and the numbers we're seeing here are similar to what we were seeing with the netmine system. For tow three, we ran a little further offshore just to kind of test a wider range of warp lengths. The headline sensor was acting up on the Scanmar system, so I didn't want to present that data that I knew wasn't quite right. But I just left that part out. But as you see here, as we went from 75 fathom up to 125 fathom of wire out, the door spread, increased spread from 30.8 up to 38.5 meters, and you had a corresponding increase in wing spread from 11.9 up to 14.4 meters. So, again, the gear reacted as expected. For tow 4, basically same idea with the netmine sensors in, same results. The only thing you see here, there's a little more spread at each of the warp lengths than what you saw on the last station, and I think that's a current issue. On the last station, we were going with the current, so the current was running behind the net. Now we had no current, so I think that may have just made a little more water pressure at the mouth of your net and doors and led to a little more spread. Station 5, again, the computer failed. I don't know what it was, Station 5, but we couldn't get it to work. So we just basically reran everything on Station 6 so that we could keep the data and keep the information. And basically, again, all we wanted to do here was rerun a speed trial where we varied vessel speed over ground within the tow to see how the gear would react. And the nice thing about this tow here on tow 6, Bobby, Jimmy's son, figured out that we could put both the Scanmar and the netmine sensors in the net at the same time and they wouldn't interfere with each other. So we could run both at the same time, basically cut the number of tows we had to do in half. And just like you expect, you went from 3 to 3.5 knots. You're going to see an increase in door spread due to an increase in water pressure on your system. Both sets of sensors show a corresponding increase in wing spread. And as your wings are spreading out, your headline is going to come down. See that in both. We slow way down. Doors come in. Wings come in, registered by both sets of sensors, and the headline can come up. So, again, overall, the gear pretty much reacted as you expected to the changes in your fishing conditions. But then, again, overall, the changes really weren't all that drastic, and the gear was pretty stable. For tow 7, all we really did there was basically just take 50 centimeters in on the setback chains again, just to show the headline would come down. And for stations 8 through 11, at this point, we wanted to play with the door settings a little bit, make the doors more or less aggressive and see how the gear would react. And really the main take-home message from this point is there wasn't that big of a change. You do see a little bit of variability here and there, but overall, like I said, the changes that we made really weren't all that great. And just to run through briefly then, we started out on station 8, moving the warps to the aftmost toe position on the inside of the doors to make them more aggressive. Ran a speed trial again. Overall, we saw about 5 to 5.5 meters of head rope height, about 12 to 13 meters of wing spread, and somewhere in the low 30s for our door spread, so about what we've been seeing all along. Station 9, we moved the warps to the foremost toe points on the inside of the doors, making them less aggressive. Numbers are about the same, somewhere in the low 30s for your door spread, 12 to 13 meters of wing spread, and about 5 to 5.5 meters of head rope height. Station 10, we left the toe warps attached to the foremost position, let some links out on the back straps to make them even less aggressive, and your numbers are about the same. And Station 11, we made the doors more aggressive by moving the warps back to the aftmost toe point again and taking links in on the back straps, again, to make the doors more aggressive, and the numbers are about right on. But the one thing I did want to mention about Station 11, it kind of sums up everything that we've been doing all along pretty nicely. We varied both warp and vessel speed over ground within each warp length, and the gear pretty much reacted as you expect. The more wire you have out at both speeds, the more wing spread you're going to have, the less head rope you're going to have. And within each of the warps, the faster you're going, the more water pressure on your system, more spread, less head rope height. So, again, overall, the gear reacted pretty much like you'd expect, but it was pretty stable. And that wraps up the June trip and brings us to the fall trip, where, as I said, we put this gear to test in a fishery-independent trawl survey application. This gives you some idea of what we accomplished for the NEMAP Inshore Trawl Survey. We shot for sampling 100 stations, from basically Montauk, New York, down to Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, between the 20 and 90-foot depth contours. The stations are given by the red dots up here. They're kind of hard to see. The black dots indicate where we're actually able to complete a tow. You can't really see it up there, but I'll just tell you, overall we got 98 of 100 stations for our trip, so 98% of what we set out to do, which isn't too bad for a pilot survey. In terms of how the gear performed, this graph is similar to what we've been looking at all along, whereas you have your head rope height down here, wing spread up here, vessel speed over ground in this area. But now instead of being a look at just a single station, this shows you the overall trip. Instead of having time on your x-axis, you have station number. And now each point on your graph, rather than being an individual piece of data collected by Netmind, is an overall station average. So, for example, your first column of 3 points here is your average wing spread, vessel speed over ground, and headline height for that first station. Next set of three for the next station, and so on down the line. For this trip, each of our tows were 20 minutes long. All of our net settings were neutral, with the exception of the sweep, which we had in the forward position. We had the warps attached to the center tow point on the inside of each door, and we had 50 fathom of wire out on each of the winches at each station. And these settings basically came from what we had learned on the trips that we ran in May and June. And as you can see here, overall, we had an average vessel speed over ground at 3.1 knots for the survey. Had a head rope height, 5.1 meters on average throughout. And as you can see, it varied somewhere between 5 and 5.5 meters on each of the tows. And then for our wing spread, we had an average wing spread of 13.6 meters throughout the entire trip, varying somewhere between about 13 and 14 meters for each of the stations. So as you can see, the gear was pretty stable throughout the entire trip. And again, the gear was meant to fish between 13 to 14 meters of wing spread and 4.5 to 5.5 meters of head rope height. So it was pretty much right on the nose there. And just to finish up talking a little bit about catches, this gives you just some idea of how we caught. I'm sorry the XY axes are kind of small. It looked bigger on the other computer. But this is a biomass frequency distribution. It tells you the amount of biomass collected at each station on your x-axis, the number of stations in which we saw that amount of biomass on the Y. We caught as little as about 25-ish kilograms in our smallest tow, up to about 1,300 kilograms on our largest tow. But for the most part, we were getting somewhere between 50 and about 250 kilograms per tow in the inshore waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight. And then again, in terms of species diversity, this is a diversity frequency distribution. You have the number of species collected at a tow on the X-axis, number of tows in which we saw that diversity on the Y. We caught as few as 2. As many as 46 species per tow, but for the most part, we're somewhere in the 10 to 32 species per tow range. So as you can see, this net caught a wide range of organisms for us, again, in the coastal waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight. And that is a really brief summary of our fall survey. It brings us to the overall wrap-up summary slide. So overall, in terms of what we saw and what we accomplished in 2006 with the NEMAP inshore trawl survey gear, the Tiburon Type 4 66-inch doors and the three-bridle four-seam bottom trawl, May. Remember, that was our first opportunity, really, to fish this net-door combination in the field. We saw that in the inshore waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight, the gear performed as expected. We had 13 to 14 meters of wing spread, about 5 to 5.5 meters of head rope height, that over the range of net settings and fishing conditions we tested, the gear was reacting as we would expect, more or less. But overall, these reactions really weren't all that drastic. Again, in the inshore waters of the Mid-Atlantic Bight, this gear was pretty stable. June took our second trip. I remember we invited some members of the Northeast Center along so they could kind of, I guess, check out this gear in the field as well. And we pretty much confirmed what we saw on the May trip, that the net fished as intended, that it reacted to changes in net settings and fishing conditions as expected. But overall, these changes really weren't all that dramatic, and the gear was pretty stable. And then, as I said, in the fall trip, we had the opportunity to put this gear really to the test in the fishery-independent trawl survey application and showed that the gear fished as intended throughout the trip. It was stable, and the catches, both in terms of the abundance and diversity, were decent, at least from our point of view, on an inshore trawl survey in the Mid-Atlantic Bight. And with that, that's pretty much all I have today. As I said, we're less than a year old, so we don't have a ton of data, but I hope that was useful in some way. And if you guys have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. And other than that, thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you.
Thank you. Dr. Pierce.
I have no questions, but if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion in the interest of time.
Yeah, I do think we have a question or two, though. Paul Howard.
I've been concerned about the size of the new research vessel and being able to stay more offshore because it draws 25 feet as opposed to what the earlier one was. And I note that the NEMAP survey did a pilot survey 20 to 90 feet. So with Russ and everyone in the room, what is the intent of the federal survey to coordinate with the inshore survey? What depth are you going to start at? And I hope that my concern in the Gulf of Maine is that we don't go to a different survey and lose a lot of the inshore surveys that the feds have been getting for years. So that's my question. Is there going to be a handoff of, say, from 30 feet to Seawood would be federal?
Russell Brown with the Northeast Fishery Science Center. The Bigelow will draft, and its operational capability will be about 10 feet deeper on average than the Albatross. And that's primarily because of a large centerboard that has a number of transducers on it. And when that centerboard is deployed, the minimal operational depth of the vessel will be about 40 feet. And so there is 1 to 1.5 inshore strata that we will not be able to sample as a result of that. I think one of the reasons that we've been working so closely with the NEOMAP process, and one of the reasons that NEOMAP is trying to adopt similar gear to what, or hopefully identical gear to what is going to be used on the Bigelow, is so that we can sort of have this survey sharing with a NEOMAP process focusing on those inshore strata and the federal boat working more on in terms of the offshore strata.
Thanks, Russ. All right, Jim Rohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of clarification. I don't know if everybody was that way, but I actually should have caught it before because I've been through it. But Station 7 is not included in my handout. I don't know if you've David, is that in yours? And do you go from 6 to 8?
As a matter of fact,
you do. Okay. Well, just Jim referred to 7 as the one tow. And if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, you have to understand that in the first two cruises here, we had the opportunity to play with this gear to make damn sure we were satisfied it did what we, the industry, would have expected it to do. We weren't in a tank. We weren't in a survey mode. And in order to make us feel comfortable that we had made the right decision all the way down the road, I had the ability to adjust this gear. And while I call your attention to this, two different stations. Let's do seven first, because that particular one, David, and everybody that's fished a trawl net will recognize this. We pulled the top bridle in 60 centimeters, 22 inches. And when you look at the slides ahead of it and behind it, right away you lost about almost a meter of head rope height. Everything else stayed consistent. That's exactly the response you would have expected. But with the net monitoring equipment on the gear, we were able to determine that. So that was, you know, and then as soon as we dropped it back, she came right back up. So, you know, just exactly what you would do under a normal fishing operation to change your gear worked. The other one that's very critical, and Jim didn't expand on it, which I don't blame him for, is four. If you look at four, you'll notice three different tow cable lengths for that tow in the same depth. This is one that you should have no problem recognizing that what happens in an overspread condition. This is what tripped up the trawl committee from day one. We underestimated the spreading force of the doors. So we were constantly using too big of doors. But here, see what happens when you go from 75 to 100? Look at your head rope height. Same speeds. Look at your head rope height. And look at your wing spread. There's the key right there. You can only spread a net so far. And that's it. I don't care what you put in front of it. It's going to go so far, then you're going to start getting negative effects at some other end, and it's head rope height or loss of bottom contact. We know that. This supports that. So for this portion of the cruise, and this was actually why the second cruise took place. I was so amazed by the response that I got out of this gear and how closely we mirrored what we tried to do for 2 years as far as wanting this gear to fit how to fish. That I said to myself, there was no science center people on the boat. I'm saying, I ain't going to sell this one. You know, I mean, I might have a little credibility. I ain't going to buy this. So I said, you got to bring your stuff down here with your people, and we're going to do this again. And that's why the second cruise took place, just to satisfy everybody. But the take-home message here, this gear's stability is incredible. There's a couple of tows in there, one on a survey that I actually had to, one in the early May where we made a real sharp turn just to see what she'd do. I'll see how hard can I turn her and not close her up. And then another one, a gill netter off of New York, decided I was didn't want to be there, so we run a net in front of me. You know, we put her in the same moat, made the turn. Didn't lose spread, didn't lose height, didn't lose anything, completed the tow. So I got a lot of confidence in his gear. I really do. And that's the take-home message, and I think Captain Rodney's been very involved, and so is Philly, with the development of this. You got to remember, you know, this concept here. We were asked to do something that hadn't been done before. Design a real small net that won't overwhelm scientists for a real big boat. That was quite a challenge, you know. And these 66 doors look foolish on my boat compared to my 96s. You want to see them on the Bigelow. I mean, they got to take my recommendation before she leaves Norfolk. They're bright blue. They got to paint them white. And if they ever decide on a Hallen port, paint that on them and make people think it's part of the boat. Because if they don't, they're going to have a problem. But they do the job. The take-home message, they do the job. And again, this Station 4 supports the idea that we can establish parameters for this gear. And as long as you attain that, you don't have to go by ratio of wire. When you get out to 250 fathoms, you don't have to have 3-to-1. You get it to where the net is in that position, that's all you need. So there's your consistency, and that's what we're striving for, not only inshore but offshore. But Jim's done a great job with the presentation, and if there's any specific questions, again, Captain Rodney and myself will be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have nothing but admiration and great respect for those who were involved in the development of the gear design. You know, from Jimmy Rule, who chaired the committee, the trial survey advisory panel, that is not committee, the panel, from his leadership, is taking the net out on board the boat, his boat, and testing it. You know, the gear designers, the manufacturers, the scientists, all the stakeholders, this was a major effort that was extremely well done. And I also commend the Northeast Fishery Science Center for being so involved in this and so receptive to the ideas that were provided. And, of course, they had a tremendous amount of input into the design of the net as well. So, again, excellent job by all concerned. We have a letter before us from Frank L. Mader, Acting Science and Research Director, and he indicates that the design was completed in conjunction with the stakeholders, scientists, and gear manufacturers. It was tested in model form in the flume tank in St. John's, Newfoundland. It was tested at sea on the NOAA ship Delaware II, adopted for use in the NEMAP inshore survey. I'm chairman of the NEMAP board for ASMFC. ASMFC last week heard a presentation. I think it was maybe the same presentation by Jim. Well received. It's the net that ASMFC says is the net to be used for NEMAP. Consequently, you know, with all that said, I would make a motion, and that motion is to endorse the trawl survey advisory panel recommendation regarding the gear design to be used on future bottom trawl surveys conducted by the FSV Henry B. Bigelow. And I should also highlight, too, the Mid-Atlantic Council has adopted this gear design. They have endorsed it, so this council is seconding that endorsement provided by the Mid.
Is there a second? Seconded by... He stole your thunder, Rodney. Okay.
While I have the mic, I'd just like to say something. Industry feels very comfortable with this gear. It's hard to get three fishermen in a room to agree on one net. Imagine having three fishermen, some scientists, gear researchers, and people from Woods Hole there, and we all feel comfortable with this gear.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. I guess I have a question for Frank. Would it, for consistency's sake, would it be best if we at least reference the motion that the Mid passed because it's very specific as to the specifications of the net? Would that be something you'd like?
I think referencing it would be fine, or actually putting in the specs in this motion. Either or. I suspect that Rodney was going to put the specs in. So either or, if you reference it, so just so that we have the specs in there.
Yeah, it'd probably be the mid's motion, I think, contains all of the elements that.
Right. Okay, I'll move on behalf of the Trawl Survey Advisory Panel, recommends the specifics in the technical addendum. A three bridle four seam 400 by 12 centimeter net, use of one of two sweeps, one rock hopper or one cookie with 66 inch type 4 Tiburon doors or doors with equivalent performance, i.e., 4.5 to 5 meters of head rope height, 12.5 to 14 meters of wing spread, and 30 to 45 meters of door spread at 3.2 knots to be utilized in future bottom trawl surveys on the FSV Henry B. Bigelow.
Dr. Pierce?
That's a friendly amendment. That's
you accept that as a friendly amendment? Okay, that's a friendly amendment. Okay. May I, Terry Stockwell, to that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually had a couple questions. I also echo Dr. Pierce's support and thanks for a job well done. Appreciate it a lot. I don't know who to pose questions to, perhaps Frank. Is it the intention to standardize this gear for the inshore trawl surveys as well?
I'm not sure I quite understand what standardized the gear for the inshore surveys.
Well, we've got a net that everyone seems to like. Would it be your intent to standardize this gear, say, for perhaps the Mass and Main inshore trawl surveys as well? We've got a gap between where the Bigelow is going to be and where the states do their trawl surveys, and with the reliance we have on the index-based surveys, the best data we can would be appreciated.
Well, I think that Each of the surveys is an independent survey. I mean, we've had the State of Mass survey that's been run on the Gloria Michelle with the three-quarter Yankee, I think it is for many years. That's an independent survey from the Center Survey now. The State of Maine survey has been running for six or so years, and we have in fact endorsed this on this gear, which will consider a separate survey for the Mid-Atlantic waters. To be honest with you, the concern that I have with the pilot survey and what will happen when the NEMAP survey at some point becomes operational is there's a little gap between the end of the State of Mass survey around Martha's Vineyard to Long Island Sound. We need to work that out. It's Rhode Island. we need to figure that out because that gap can't exist when we go into an operational mode. But I think that we're considering these three separate surveys. And the assessment models that we use can handle the separate surveys. The difference between and the concern that we have with the switching from the Albatross to the Bigelow is the fact that the Bigelow has taken over a different survey. So with the calibration experiment that we're going through is it's different than it is for these inshore surveys that we're going to be using as separate indices.
While you're there, Frank, I probably haven't been wording my question right. I'm very concerned that, for instance, to determine the status of Gulf of Maine cod, we had a federal survey using federal gear from here to here. Now we're going to have state gear from here to here in a federal survey. What is the calibration so we don't lose that Gulf of Maine data on cod or any other Gulf of Maine species? How are we going to calibrate going from a federal net to a state net to make sure we have consistent data for Gulf of Maine cod so that 5 or 10 years from now we say, oh my God, that was a problem?
We in fact may lose some of the information from the offshore survey on those areas, but I think that the State of Maine survey, for instance, that covers the down east waters, they're actually sampling in a more intensive way than we have on the Albatross surveys anyway, because of their areas in the inshore waters of the Gulf of Maine that we can't get in with the Albatross either. But the operation that is taking place on the state of Maine, the Maine-New Hampshire Inshore Survey. Sorry. New Hampshire Maine Survey. It's a little piece of land. We're in New Hampshire. Is more intense, and it's actually the sampling intensity is slightly better than it is on the offshore survey. These are the issues that we need to deal with when we're doing the calibrations, and these are the concerns that we have, is that we're going to be losing data. The question is how much information we're going to be losing. These are the things that our population dynamics branch staff are, believe me, it's at the right on the top of their agenda, along with data pull workshops and GARM and SARCs.
Okay, I had Phil Rule, then Phil, do you have a comment? Dave Pierce, then Rodney Avila, and then I think we need to move on.
The Massachusetts survey will not change its net for a while anyways. We're also concerned about before and after and having a time series of data, especially during these difficult times of ground fish management as we move towards the next amendment. So we're not going to make any change, and we're going to watch very carefully and work very carefully with the Northeast Fisheries Science Center regarding comparison tows, the Bigelow versus the Albatross, and hopefully school with their exercise, since we will eventually have to consider this net for our inshore survey and do comparison tows, Gloria Michelle, before and after, current net, and then the new net. So we're very happy this work has been done. It's time to go to a new net, certainly a new federal net, and we'll just see how all this falls out, especially after the center does its comparison tows with Bigelow versus the Albatross, and you know, we'll see whether we have to start a brand-new time series or whether we're actually able to continue the one we've got.
I have a question for Paul. Are you more concerned with the change of the vessel or the change of the gear type? Is that your concern?
My concern is with data.
I know your concern is with the data, yeah. But is it due to the change of the vessel or due to the change of the gear type?
Change of the vessel.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Sixteen opposed. Abstain. One abstention. Motion carries. Anything else? Rodney.
Yes. On behalf of the Trawl Survey Committee, I have another motion to bring forward before the council. The panel moved that the Trawl Survey Advisory Panel recommend that NOAA establish a formal training program for all personnel involved in the vessel fishing crew, survey leadership, and shore-based PACE personnel for understanding and handling, repairing, and construction of fishing gear utilized during fishery surveys by the National Fishery Science Center.
This also was a motion passed
by
the Mid-Atlantic Council.
By the panel. Yeah, and,
okay. Yeah. We have a second. Seconded by Phil Rule. Any discussion? Phil Rule.
This point here is probably my biggest blocking point, you know, has been right through this thing. And to me, as much work as went into this net, to not, having judged by past history, to not have this, some kind of training in place, people know what the hell the gear is, get an understanding of it, makes all the work that went into designing the net almost useless. So in my mind, you can't have one without the other. They have to be basically go together.
Thanks, Phil. Anyone else? Harriet?
I had it before, but perhaps it goes along with this, too. When the net goes on the Bigelow, will the people who were involved in doing it on your boat, the group, will they be out on one of those surveys on the Bigelow to see if all those numbers, head rope, foot rope, spread, that they are going to be the same when you put it on the Bigelow? Is that going to happen? Follow up to see if all the numbers come the same?
Yes, ma'am. I guarantee it. Okay. Captain Rodney and myself are both scheduled to go on the first sailing of the vessel when it goes on its cruise to make sure that that does happen.
And do all the and have the same monitoring going on the same parts of the trawl?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? 16-01. Motion carries. Anything else, Rodney? That's it. Frank.
Just one last thing. I'd like to add my congratulations to the advisory panel. It's been a long time, and it's been hard at some times, but I think the product that we have and the gear that we have is going to hold us in good stead on the Bigelow, and I congratulate the panel and Jim and Russ has been our main guy on the advisory panel. I want to congratulate both of them.
Thanks, Frank. I'd also like to thank Jim. Thanks for coming all the way up and giving this presentation. I guess this is the second or third time you've given it to a council or a ASMFC.
Three or four.
Okay.
Five next week at Mid-Atlantic if you want to come see it again.
Okay. Well, thanks again. It was very informative.
Well, thanks for having me up. I appreciate the opportunity.
We're going to step into habitat, but before we do that, we're going to take a 10-minute break. Sally, whenever you're ready.